SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
What is dementia? How do we define that?
Dementia is a disease of the brain. It's progressive and it's fatal. And many people don't realise that it's the second leading cause of death in Australia after heart disease and the leading cause of death of women. Now, it's an umbrella term, and the term describes a large group of illnesses which cause a progressive decline in the person's function. So that can include memory, intellect, rationality, social skills, and physical functioning. There are about 150 different types of dementia, the most common being Alzheimer's disease, but some others are dementia with Lewy bodies, vascular dementia, frontotemporal dementia. And Debbie, one of the things, there's a really great resource that Dementia Australia offers called the Dementia Guide, and that's relevant for people who are newly diagnosed, and it's for people of all ages living with all forms of dementia.
Great. So that really kind of gives you a bit of a guide to understanding what's happening, really.
Look, it does. And the really good thing about this is, you know, when people get a diagnosis, often they don't hear anything that their health professional says after that. Do you know what I mean? It's often so confronting for people that they walk out and all they've heard is, I've been diagnosed with dementia. And the really great thing about the Dementia Guide is that people can pick it up and down as there are, do you know what I mean, as questions arise for them, or if they're thinking about, okay, well, who do I contact next? It helps with that. And the thing that we always say is always contact Dementia Australia on our national dementia helpline number 1800 100 500. And, you know, the guide gives all of the information across the likely things that are going to happen and the likely services that people will need over the progression of the illness.
You mentioned before that this is quite prevalent for women especially. It's one of the leading causes of death. How common is dementia?
Well, right now in Australia, we have got around 421,000 Australians living with dementia. And by 2054, we expect that to increase to well over 800,000. There just won't be anybody in Australia that's not impacted in some way.
That's a lot of people. Is that because of the ageing population, or are there other factors at play here?
Really great question. We know that age is the biggest risk factor, and it's much more likely as we age, but there are some forms of dementia that are genetic, and so the very early onset, younger onset dementias in terms of Alzheimer's disease are genetic. But we know that after the age of 65, about 1 in 10 people will have dementia. After 85, 1 in 3. And after 95, 1 in 2. So age is the biggest risk factor. But there, you know, what the research shows is that people say, and I want to couch this, carefully, because it can sound like, when you say, Deborah, that about 40% of dementia can be is related to modifiable lifestyle factors, people then think, if I get dementia, it's my fault. No, it's not their fault. And this is a really sensitive part of the conversation, because we know from the research that there are things that we can do to reduce our risk of developing dementia, but there's no guarantee. And we all know many people that have lived a pristine lifestyle that have developed dementia. But we know that by Avoiding habits such as smoking, for example, and that affects our vascular health, so that can lead to vascular dementia. So avoiding smoking, avoiding excessive alcohol use that can lead to Korsakoff dementia. These are things that we know can reduce our risk of developing, though, you know, our likelihood of developing those dementias is greatly reduced if we avoid those habits. And we know that what's good for our heart is good for our brain. So keeping physically active, keeping our brain active, learning new things, staying socially engaged is really important. And there's one risk factor, Deborah, that many people don't realise, and it's the one thing that we can all do. It's the greatest modifiable risk factor. Hearing loss increases our risk of developing dementia. So if you notice changes in your hearing, it's really important to get those checked out.
When you say hearing loss, are we talking about losing hearing or things like tinnitus?
No, we're talking about losing hearing. I think tinnitus is a different mechanism, but there's something in, you know, with hearing loss, people will often, they'll stop socialising, so they'll become socially isolated. They can then develop depression, which we know can then increase the risk of developing dementia. And so their brain is less active because they're not socialising in the same way. And we often don't think about socialising as good for our brain, but it's actually very good for our brain because we often learn new things in our social... Do you know what I mean? We might be at a theatre or we might be at an art gallery or it might be... Do you know what I mean? Talking to people and our brain is engaged and stimulated. And we learn new things. So we know that the two things that build brain volume are exercise and education. So they're two key areas in terms of reducing our risk.
Okay. Just turning now to a lot of the things that you're saying about reducing risk is also about our general quality of life as well. Now, I'm just wondering about... because of the prevalence of dementia, and not everyone with dementia is going to end up in an aged care home. Some people are going to stay at home. Some people are going to be in other settings. How do we best then care for those people in terms of education and training? What's out there for that?
Yeah, that's so great. There's actually quite a bit of education and training that's available around caring well for people living with dementia. And Dementia Training Australia, Dementia Australia is part of that consortium, and we deliver the Dementia Essentials component of that, which is a free of charge training. Their training modules that are available to all aged care providers for their staff. The other thing, Dementia Australia, we run a number of programs around and education. And a number of years ago, Deborah, we developed a technology using video game technology to simulate for people the experience of what it's like to have dementia. And we know from that, and that's evolved over the years as technology has evolved. And we have a program called EDI, which stands for the Educational Dementia Immersive Experience, but it also is the name of the man with dementia. And we use Oculus to do that training. And it puts you in the shoes of the person living with dementia. And we know from that training, the great thing about it, it doesn't rely on memory. It's experiential learning, and we know that it's much more effective than other forms of learning. So when the person caring for someone with dementia has that experience, they don't need to remember anything. It's obvious to them when they're next dealing with people living with dementia what they need to do. And that's really powerful. And we've had some evaluation of that training that has shown that it's extraordinarily effective and that people retain that information at far greater levels than they do from traditional learning. Now, traditional learning is important too, but, this is a thing that really makes a difference for people. I remember a carer that we had rang in a few days after she'd participated in the training, and she said, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe it. I went to shower Mrs. Smith this morning," and she said, "I've been looking after her for 6 months, and every time I take her to the shower, she cries. She said, this morning I knew to put her glasses on, and Mrs. Smith went to the shower. She went, oh, it's the shower. And she now showers every day with her glasses on. Mrs. Smith is delighted. The carer knows herself as someone who makes a difference. And Mrs. Smith's family are absolutely thrilled that she now is, do you know what I mean, being supported in a way that wasn't available from traditional learning practice. Yeah.
I think it sounds like it would give a really great insight. I was actually talking to someone who'd done some of that virtual reality training this morning, and she was saying it really gives you a sense of, she was saying visually you don't realise how different cognitively it is for someone with dementia, that the walls and the light switches, it's all a blur.
Yeah.
And so for someone designing a facility that they're going to be living in, they have to take these things into account. So I should imagine it would be amazingly insightful for architects and that sort of thing as well.
Absolutely. And we've done some training with architects using this, Deborah, and they're just blown away. They're like, oh my God, we never thought about that. Like, and one of the things, right, on a light coloured floor, if you've got a dark mat, it will occur for the person living with dementia like a hole, and they won't walk on it. And if you've got the dark mat in front of the shower, then the person won't get into the shower. And for family members, they're like, well, why won't they get into the shower? They've always had a shower. And what's wrong now? And what they don't realise is that people living with dementia, many of them have perceptual disturbances. So that dark mat looks like a hole in the ground, and they won't walk on it. And the other thing, tiles that are highly polished look to somebody with dementia like water over the floor, so they won't walk there either. And once you see these things for yourself, it's like you never forget them. And it is so powerfully embedded that what it allows for is for people to naturally alter the way that they care for someone with dementia.
I should imagine that if you address those issues, that would significantly reduce someone with dementia's anxiety. And, I mean, that would automatically improve their quality of life right there.
Absolutely. And that's the importance of dementia-friendly or dementia-enabling environments. And the other one is toilets. And we, look, you know, if you think about all the new builds, the bathroom is all the same colour. It's pristine, it's all white. You've got a white hand basin, a white bath or shower, and a white toilet. Now, for someone living with dementia, they can't tell the toilet from the hand basin. And in people's homes, family members will often say, look, I don't get it. Why does mum or dad go into the bathroom and they wee in the corner? Why don't they wee in the toilet? Well, they can't see the toilet. And just putting a different colour toilet seat on the toilet increases and facilitates their independence, because then they can see the toilet. They can see what it's for.
It's interesting, isn't it? As you're speaking, I'm to a man and woman. Every aged care person that I've spoken to, every aged care worker that I've spoken to, has this passion for the work that they do and the people that they care for. And I think that they would be mortified to think that what they were doing was not helping, you know, their patients. And they would be thrilled to learn all of these different things so that they could help them better. It sounds really groundbreaking to me.
Oh, and look, the other thing, Deborah, is, you know, with signage, and I don't know, I mean, often some toilet, the signs for men and women, right, in the where you haven't got, shared toilets, sometimes you can't tell the difference. Is it the man sign or is it the woman sign with some of the stick figures? And I've waited outside a toilet to see who comes out before I go in, right? I think, God, does that look like a man or a, is it the, you know, it's difficult. And some of them are, you know, they're so trendy that it's really hard to tell. And it's, that's the, you know, with signage. So what we do now with signage, wherever we've got a sign, we have a picture. Now, that's really helpful where people are visually impaired or if English is not their first language. So if there's a sign, then we have a picture beside it. So it shows a picture of a toilet or a picture of, I don't know, whatever it is that you go in, you know, a media room or, you know, so that people can actually see, oh, okay, that's what it is. Because people living with dementia often lose the ability to read, but for some reason they don't lose the ability to decipher pictures. Fascinating.
That is very interesting indeed. We were talking before about the different gender signage for bathrooms, and I'm wondering how do then we take into account the needs of people with dementia who might be also gender diverse and perhaps transgender or something like that. How do we take that into account with some of
there
the training?
There are some places. Well, I think some providers do this exceptionally well, Deborah, and others don't. There's still, do you know what I mean? There's still a little way to go. But the important thing about gender diversity, gender sensitivity, you know, sexual orientation, it's actually about knowing the individual. And once you know the individual and you know their story, then you can create an environment that really supports them and works for them. And it is all about knowing the individual and them knowing that they're accepted, that they're included, that, you know, their choice is absolutely validated and nurtured. And the other thing, it's not just about, you know, it's about supporting the individual, but it's also about supporting their partners and their friends so that when they visit, that they feel included, that they feel welcomed. You know, it's a really important conversation and one that we've still got work to do on.
Why do people want to be at work? To feel heard, appreciated, part of something, and to know there's a career path for everyone. Inclusive workplaces are linked to increased innovation, productivity, and employee satisfaction. Make your organisation a place where people want to be. For inclusion and diversity training, visit inclusion-program.com.au.